Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Are you ready to create a joyful life? You came here to make a difference in the world, and you can do it. We can show you how. Move beyond the basics of health and wealth and into a life of lasting joy with Lynn McGonigal, the founder and teaching channel of the Lightworkers Healing Method, right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Listen in as Lynn and her inspiring guests talk about what really matters in life and be who your soul wants you to be.
Greetings, friends. Welcome to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. I'm Lynn McGonigal, your host. You're listening to a live Dream Vision 7 Radio Network broadcast at 1510 a.m. NBC Sports Radio, Boston. We're heard live every second Sunday at 6 p.m. You can also tune into our show on our station, Dream Vision 7 Radio, every week on Thursday and Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern and 5 a.m. Eastern for our European friends. To learn more and for a full station schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Friends, we're here today to talk about the Shaman's Path with Hank Wesselman, who's a shaman and a scientist and the author of many books, including The Bowl of Light, which is by far the best book on Hawaiian shamanism I've ever read. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Hank Wesselman's a paleoanthropologist, a cutting-edge scientist, and he walks in many worlds. He did his undergraduate work and his master's degree in zoology at the University of Colorado in Boulder. He spent time serving in the Peace Corps. He lived among people of the Yoruba tribe in Nigeria, and that caused him to get interested in indigenous spiritual traditions. So then Hank went on to receive his doctoral degree in anthropology from the University of California at Berkeley, probably at an exciting time to be in Berkeley. For most of the past 40 years, he's conducted research with an international group of scientists exploring Eastern Africa's Great Rift Valley in search of answers to the mystery of human origins. His fieldwork has allowed him to spend much of his life living with tribal peoples who are rarely, if ever, visited by outsiders, and among whom he first encountered traditional shamans. Dr. Wesselman is also a shamanic practitioner and teacher, now in the 30th year of his apprenticeship. And friends, listen to that. He's been working for 30 years in shamanism, and he still terms himself an apprentice. Now think of the true meaning of a teacher. A teacher has to have humility to keep growing in order to really have anything to offer the world. And so here Dr. Wesselman, after 30 years, is still identifying himself as a learner. Isn't that beautiful? He wrote a great autobiographical trilogy, Spirit Walker, Medicine Maker, and Vision Seeker, and they've been published in 13 languages, and they talk about the nature of his initiation into the shaman's world of mystery and magic. They document his investigations into a hidden reality that most of us have heard about, but few have experienced directly, although, of course, here in the Lightworkers Healing Method, that is exactly what we also teach. Hank is also the author of The Journey to the Sacred Garden, Spirit Medicine, The Spirit Walker Teachings, and Little Ruth Reddingford and the Wolf, which is a children's book. Last year, he co-authored the award-winning Awakening to the Spirit World with Sandra Ingerman. And now his recent book, The Bowl of Light, looks in a beautiful way into the mind of an authentic Hawaiian kahuna mystic. It's an amazing book. It's alive, unlike any other book in Hawaiian shamanism that I've ever read. Hank and his family live on Hawaii, the big island of Hawaii, and they have a website, sharedwisdom.com. It's really an honor to have you here, Hank. I'm just very excited to have this conversation today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm going to try to live up to everything you've said about me.
No pressure, huh? But it's true. It's all true. So, Hank, why is it that your book, this beautiful book, The Bowl of Light, why is it alive? What makes it alive like that?
Well, you know, in response to the publication of my first book in the trilogy, the book called Spirit Walker, I was drawn into connection with a Hawaiian elder named Hale Makua. He came to sort of check me out, I think, at a talk I was giving at an institute here on the Big Island back in 1996. And when he walked into the room, the energy of the room completely changed. I'm 6 feet tall, and this is a man who's half a head taller than I am, with a great big ponytail down his back and a great big beard down his front. He's got a big walking stick in front of him. And he brings, you know, a whole group of Hawaiian men and women with him, because that first book, Spirit Walker, took me into the realms of mystery and magic of the Hawaiian shamans, and especially into what could be called kahuna wisdom. And, you know, I published some of this stuff, and I was very sensitive to the fact that indigenous people have mixed feelings about outsiders trespassing into their spiritual traditions. I mean, you know this? I know this. And yet, you know, I was given permission to do this by, if I could put it this way, by my spirits.
Right.
So, you know, this is a very strange book, Spirit Walker, about how I was drawn into connection with the mind and soul of another man who lives in the future.
And I read Spirit Walker when it first came out, just so you know, Hank. It's a wonderful book. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, if I've got this right, and I believe I do, this man who lives in the future is one of my descendants, which explains part of the causality for the connection with him. And, you know, if I've got it right, I believe he's one of my descendant selves.
That's what my interpretation was, is that he's a future life of yours.
A future life and a future slice of time.
Yes.
Roughly, let's say 5,000 years to round it off, roughly 5,000 years after the collapse of Western civilization.
Yes.
So Hale Makua had read this book, and to say just a little bit about him, Hale Makua was a seventh-generation direct descendant of King Kamehameha on his mother's side, and a seventh-generation direct descendant of High Chief Keuwa on his father's side. Now, in Polynesia, genealogy is everything. It defines you, it defines your mana, your power, it defines your ike, your spiritual knowledge. And so this guy was very much like the Dalai Lama of Polynesia. Everyone knew him, from Aotearoa, New Zealand, to Rapa Nui, Easter Island, all the way back up to Hawaii. Everybody knew this guy. So I was aware of who this man was when he first walked into my life that day at the Institute here on the Big Island. And, you know, it was a little intimidating, to say the least.
Right. No, you know, pressure.
This wasn't just any kahuna who'd come to hear me talk. This was the big kahuna.
Yeah. He was the big kahuna. The king.
Well, you know, on that day, as I recall, I launched into a rather academic talk, because I'm an academic, okay? I launched into this talk about the transformational community, who we are. You know, all of your listeners out there in cyberspace are transformationals. And I talked about who we are, what we believe in, what we hold dear in our belief systems, and so forth and so on, and how we're in the process of creating a new world. And so at the end of my talk, I got this sort of pulling sensation on my soul. And this is something which is familiar to me. I got this feeling that there was something that he had come to say to me. And so there are about 50 people in the room. And, you know, so I took the plunge, and I said, Makua, which is what people called him, Makua, I said, you know, I don't know what the correct protocol is in addressing you as an elder, but allow me to say that I'm getting this feeling that you've come here to say something, and I would like to invite you to speak. Well, I watched him very carefully, and here's this big, burly Hawaiian guy with his walking stick, and he briefly looks down, and I watch him dissociate.
Yeah.
I saw him do this.
Yeah.
He was connecting with his ancestors, but I didn't know that then. And they were advising him, and like, you know, 15, 20 seconds later, he was back.
Right.
And he looked at me and smiled and stood up. Now, this was quite something, because this guy was, you know, well over 6 feet tall, very impressive. And he looked at me and he said, you know, a friend of mine sent me your book, Spirit Walker, and I read it. And then I read it again just to make sure I got it right. And I went down to the beach and I put your book down on the sand. And I called in the ancestors and we had a talk about you. Silence in the room. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. You know, this was the moment of truth. This was high noon in Polynesia. So, you know, he looked at me and he said, you know, we Hawaiians don't write books. We talk and we share what we find in our hearts with each other. But in your culture, in Western culture, it's the tradition to write. And I've come here today to say to you that everything that you wrote in your book is true. And we Hawaiians need to support you. You're, you know, making my job easier. So keep spreading the word. Yeah. Well, you know, this was really quite something. The energy in the room was palpable. You know, some people were crying.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare that an indigenous elder endorses an outsider. Well, he comes over after my talk and looks at me and says, we should have a meeting before you leave the island. And in fact, this was the beginning of a most interesting friendship that extended over the last 8 years of his life. And the Bowl of Light is a compendium of our philosophical discussions in which he shared a great deal of the deep wisdom of the Kahuna mystics of Polynesia. And it focused really on the nature of who we are, you know, the levels of self that come together to create our soul complex. We talked about reality. We talked about the ancestral grand plan. We talked about many things, and I've tried to organize that in a way which would make sense to Western readers in my book, The Bowl of Light. I'm very grateful that you liked it.
Well, the way you're describing it, to be honest, Hank, is not. I don't think it's doing the book proper credit because, yes, of course, it's a compendium of information, but there's something more about it, Hank, because that's exactly how I would label all the other books on Hawaiian shamanism I've read, a compendium of useful or interesting information. But your book is alive. It's alive. There's energy in it. A reader can tap into the wisdom of Hawaiian philosophy. I don't know the right words, and I'm probably butchering it. But a reader can tap into that which is behind the life of a kahuna, and it's beautiful and very accessible, in my opinion.
Well, you said you sent me an email the other day that because of the book which created a doorway for you, that Makua showed up in your living room.
He did. I want to ask you about that. Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure. But before we do, let me just say for your listenership that Makua passed in 2004. He passed early. He was only 65 years old. And he spent the last week of his life with my wife and I in Waimea on the Big Island. And the night before he passed, he talked to me and he said, you know, I know you're going to write a book about me. And he essentially gave me permission to write about him, which he had never done before. I think he realized his contract was up, and he was racing against time to set something into motion. And so this was part and parcel of how the Bowl of Light came into being. But, you know, for people who are receptive, who are, let's say, spiritually open to connection with the other side, this book, The Bowl of Light, can serve as a doorway in which you can be brought into connection with this interesting man.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And when I still haven't gotten clear about what, why did he come and have a chat with me in my living room, Hank? And I just wanted to, it's so fascinating because he said that there was something that he had come to the conclusion that he was clear on and other things that he was still working through. But what he was clear on is that the way that the rules used to be written about how, I believe, wisdom is transmitted, the rules that used to apply, he has now realized, and the sense was it wasn't just him. You know, it's the wise elders in the higher dimensions. All the wise elders had come to the conclusion that the old rules weren't going to work to get us from where we are here as a community on Earth to where we need to be as a community on Earth in order to prevent a major disaster. That under the old rules, the major disaster is pretty much guaranteed. And that, therefore, rules are being reevaluated. And so now listening to you talk, I'm thinking maybe one of the rules that was reevaluated is to allow an outsider, you know, you're a white man, to write a book fundamentally about the Hawaiian spiritual tradition. That's breaking the rules.
Well, Lynn, let me ask you, make a request. It would be very interesting for me if you were to create an email and send it to me about anything that he said, because this will resonate very strongly, I'm sure, because he said things in a certain way. And this was very much in alignment with the fact, you know, there was this technology of transcendence that was developed by the Stone Age shamans, maybe as early as 100,000 years ago. We don't really know. In my investigations, by 70,000 years ago, we begin to pick up evidence for the shamanic tradition in South Africa at a cave called Blombos near the Indian Ocean, where there are pieces of red ochre with inscribed petroglyphs, I guess you could call them, which resemble very greatly the great web, the great matrix, the great net, through which everything everywhere is connected with everything else. So, you know, across the intervening 70,000 years, the shaman's path has been the ancient spiritual path on which people have walked. Until, of course, the beginnings of our organized religions, would, you know, only began, you know, within the last 3,000 to 4,000 years. I mean, these are very, very recent by comparison with 70, 80, 90,000 years. So, you know, it was always understood among the traditional people that each new generation had the responsibility to recreate and perpetuate a continually refreshed body of knowledge, even adding to and changing the accumulating treasure of wisdom and practice, because it was always in this way that the path remained vital and meaningful to the people who walked it.
Yes.
And so this sounds very much like what Makua is saying, that, you know, he's very much aware of the fact that the old rules. It's kind of like Bill Maher on television, on HBO. I don't know if you see him. He has a part of a show called New Rules, in which he takes the old rules and just sort of deconstructs them, and then he replaces them with something which is much more appropriate. And, of course, sometimes these are just kind of off the mark and you know, sort of off color and all sorts of things. You know what Bill Maher is like.
No, I don't. I don't. I haven't had TV in over 20 years, so I'm a pop culture idiot. But
well,
I trust,
you know,
that our listeners know more than I do.
Yeah. Anyway, this, you know, the reworking of the old rules, which are no longer serving us, this is a major preoccupation for me at this time in my life.
Yes, and me too.
I'm aware that the old mythos, the old cultural mythos, is no longer serving us. You know, the old... well, for example, the old creation myth of the Judeo-Christians, you know, with the Garden of Eden and so forth and so on, and Adam and Eve. This is all very nice if you understand that it's a metaphor, that is a fiction, which is not meant to be taken as truth. But there are eternal truths that even children can understand within the mythos. Well, we live in a time in which a new cultural mythos is coming into being. And part of what the book, The Bowl of Light, is about is zeroing in on a new understanding of who we are, what we're doing here, what the universe is all about, and how we fit into the great scheme of things. And I think we need to write a new story. And a number of us are very much involved with trying to bring through, to channel, if you will, what the spirits have to offer about the new story that we need to create in our time. And this will completely change the way in which we see ourselves in our world, I think. That's a very good thing.
Yes, this is exactly, we have a couple of things in the program that I teach. One is the soul plan challenge, calling people to live their own soul plan, you know, discover it and live it, and then also help the greater good live the soul plan, because as each of us is living by our own soul contract, the greater good is also pulled into the contract, so to speak, the plan for the greater good. And then also we have this team universe, group of people, group of, we teach energy working with, it's you could think of it as neo-shamanic work, but literally working hands-on to shift the greater good into that which it needs to be, that which is planned for it to be. So we're going to have to go to a break soon, but when we come back, I would very much like to talk about this, Hank, the concept of who we are, what's the grand scheme, how do we do this? How do we as a transformational community really affect a change right now? Because now is the time. Now is the time. So, friends, you're listening to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. I'm your host, Lynn McGonigal, here today with our guest, Hank Wesselman, scientist and shaman. You can find out more about Hank at sharedwisdom.com and about the Lightworkers Healing Method at lightworkersmethod.com. Friends, you can be who your soul wants you to be. In just a few minutes, we'll be back for more with Hank Wesselman.
Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Join Lynn McGonigal, the founder of the Lightworkers Healing Method, as she and her amazing guests show you how to move into a life of lasting joy. Miracles happen every second Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Hasn't your soul already waited long enough?
Welcome to In Spirit with Maria Halverson. I'm Maria Halverson, your host. In Spirit comes to you every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. to bring you stories that will inspire you to open your hearts and minds to the afterlife. In Spirit is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second and fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
Join us on Creating a Spirited Life with Janet Kesenick the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. We'll explore the day-to-day moments that puzzle, enlighten, and bring us into deeper connection with our best selves. Find meaning, purpose, and humor while creating a spirited life. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Tune in every first Sunday at 6 p.m. for Maximum Success, the Coach Brew Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Lynn McGonigal, host of Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be, and we're here today with Hank Wesselman, shaman and scientist and author of many books, including his latest, The Bowl of Light, the best book on Hawaiian shamanism I've ever read. Welcome back, friends, and thank you, Hank, for being with us again.
Hey, my pleasure.
Right before the break, we were talking about the big concepts that are in front of the transformational community right now, and that this Hawaiian mystical tradition also touch on. Who are we really? And what is this grand scheme, the grand plan? And how do we as a transformational community do this? How do we get from where we are right now to where we as a community on Earth need to be? Do you have thoughts?
Well, you know, I could draw on my friend Makua and his great knowledge and, you know, his words about the ancestral grand plan. And there's a chapter on this in the book, The Bowl of Light. What he said was, the plan is as much of the divine purpose that can be brought into expression upon the planet at any one time. The one thing that humanity needs to know today is that there is an ancestral grand plan, one that is definitely working out through all the world's happenings and through all that has happened in humanity's historical past. And, you know, he was very reassuring about this. He said, because of this, we can be reassured that everything is right on track. This was something he said often, that everything is right on track. And even though our world is skewed and out of kilter and our government seems to be broken, you know, everything seems to be proceeding just the way it should be. He went on to say that from the perspective of the average person who thinks in terms of earthly happiness, the plan should be something joyful, as well as something that makes material life easier. But from the perspective of those of us who have moved into the spiritual hierarchy, and these include those spiritual seekers who attend your workshops, my workshops, who read our books, the plan of the ancestors involves creating those circumstances that will raise and expand the consciousness of humankind.
Absolutely.
Because only this will enable all of us to discover the spiritual values that will allow us to make the needed changes to our own character, of our own free will. He went on to say this, there is something most important that the world, both Western and Indigenous, needs to comprehend. The vision itself, and by association, the ancestral grand plan, cannot be appropriated by any one group or culture. The vision lies ever ahead of each aspirant, once they step up to become a member of the spiritual hierarchy that serves as an evolutionary stairway. And he talked about the word evolution and how evolution simply means change. And although there are people in the Christian community especially who are very resistant to this word, the fact is that everything is changing, even as we speak on the radio. You're changing, I'm changing. Change means evolution. So, you know, if I were to just say just a little bit about the plan here without going into detail, the plan represents a united effort by the collective planetary spiritual hierarchy. It was originally initiated by and is now supported by our ancestors and is designed to expand the consciousness of our children, our society, as well as humanity as a whole. And the plan has two initial goals. First, is the expansion of each individual's horizons of thought, as well as the increasing and strengthening of our spirituality, our self-assurance, and our knowledge at all levels. This is necessary to clear up certain areas of doubt, he felt, And these doubts are formidable adversaries for all of us because they keep us in confusion and thus create separation. This seems to be, you know, without going political, the way in which our politicians work. They keep us in confusion, and this creates separation.
And it's not just the politicians, it's the culture. Hank, we live in a culture that has what I call a fab, and no disrespect to the culture. I'm grateful to live in a place where we have garbage pickup and roads. Don't get me wrong. But
that's right.
There's a fabric of lies where people tell each other social fibs, and that's polite. It's rude to be honest if you don't want to do something. It's not just the political structure. It's our culture.
Yeah, it is. You remember that wonderful film, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, with Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor?
I'm so sorry. I'm a pop culture idiot.
Oh, it was a wonderful film. It goes back into the 50s now, in which Burl Ives played the central figure called Big Daddy. And Big Daddy comes into the room, and everybody's been just telling lies like mad, you know, trying to, get him to do this, trying to do this. And he comes in, and he looks at his wife and says, Big Mama, I do believe I detect the odor of mendacity. Isn't that a great line?
Yes. Mendacity doesn't smell good.
The odor of mendacity. Well, you know, the fact is, McCool would say with a hearty laugh, if you doubt, you're out. This is a big thing, you know, doubting. It creates separation.
It does.
And, you know, just to finish this off, you know, the second goal of the ancestral plan, according to the Kohuna Makua, is to more closely link all of our spiritual elders with each other, with our family members, with our communities, and with the workers in the world. It's about creating connection rather than separation. And he felt that to this end, all of our elders, both indigenous and Western, must bring their personal groups of family members, students, spiritual aspirants, and colleagues into connection with each other. And he felt that this needed to be done objectively, subjectively, intuitively, and eventually it will take place telepathically.
It is.
You know,
it's already taking place telepathically. That's happening.
Well, that's what you experienced when Makua walked into your living room.
Definitely.
My book, The Bowl of Light, has opened a doorway into connection with this interesting man. You know, he's on the other side now. So in many ways, he's much more available than he was in life, because in life, he remained in Hawaii, and all of my meetings with him occurred either on the Big Island of Hawaii or on Oahu, when I used to stay with him for several days at his flat, which was funded by the Ford Foundation.
That's
it's
nice.
Amazing, you know. The Ford Foundation found this man, Makua, rather late in the game in his life. But, you know, they essentially created funding for him to go and visit with the indigenous people, with the Native American nations. He went all the way to South Africa. He went all the way to Senegal. He met the voodoo chiefs in Dahomey in Nigeria. You know, he was really a spokesman for the world indigenous people's movement, and was a very, very big guy. He spoke to the United Nations, you know, back in 1993, I think. He was on stage with the Dalai Lama at the United Nations.
Well, I was thinking of him and the Dalai Lama in the same category in my head, both of them really holders of a great role in a great tradition.
They do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't get to meet an exalted soul, because that's the level that he was at, all that often in life.
I've noticed that.
Yeah. But, you know, that first day when we got together at the edge of the volcano for our meeting, it was really an extraordinary meeting because, you know, he looked at me and he said, you know, I've been looking for you for a long time. I always knew that we would eventually meet. I just didn't know where and when it would take place. And now that we've met, I have things I need to say to you. I have things I need to share with you. And I think that he shared a great deal of his indigenous wisdom with me because as an anthropologist, which I am, and as a writer, which I am, he realized that he had extended his reach far beyond the islands and was reaching into the transformational community to try to create a set of circumstances which would allow people to step up and into who they are really supposed to become in life. It's about really stepping onto the path of your destiny, don't you think?
I think it's exactly about that. So, Hank, I don't know how much you know about what I teach, but I teach an energy healing method that has as its goal to bring people back into alignment with their soul plan, with their individual soul plan. And the amalgam of all the individual soul plans, from my perspective, is what creates the divine plan, the overall grand plan. We each have plans for our lives that inspire us and terrify us. And we each have guides who are leading us forward. And all of those plans together come together to make this beautiful plan. And the plan is for things to work and for us to live lives of joy and fulfillment. But then, of course, there is free will. We don't have to follow our plan.
Well, there's always choice. There's always free will. You know, if we choose to follow those cosmic impulses which are projected into us, through the dreaming of our ancestors and through our higher self, what he called Alma Kua. What will happen during our life is what our immortal spirit self actually wants. And as we embrace those ancestral impulses that our higher self dreams, our conscious mental soul can then choose to transform those impulses into reality. When we walk this path, we're in control of our destiny. We actually create our destiny. However, you know, if we identify with those impulses that are originating from our human body, our animal body, those that originate from within our body's soul, then what happens to us is no longer what spirit wants, but rather what our physical body desires, even though we may be convinced this is what we really want. And when this happens, Makua felt that we lose control of our destiny, placing ourselves squarely on the receiving end of the forces of fate.
I agree, and let's hold that thought because we have to break for just another moment. Friends, we're here today with Hank Wesselman. I'm Lynn McConaghill. You can find out about Hank and his wonderful inspired work on his website, sharedwisdom.com, and you can find out about the Lightworkers Healing Method at lightworkersmethod.com. Come back in just a few minutes for more with Hank Wesselman.
Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Join Lynn McGonigal, the founder of the Lightworkers Healing Method, as she and her amazing guests show you how to move into a life of lasting joy. Miracles happen every second Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Hasn't your soul already waited long enough?
Money makes us react. It has a way of eliciting an immediate response. From our home life to our own business environment, money is usually front and center. For CPA Jane Honick and psychotherapist Spencer Melnick, the debate is not about what you do with your money. It's about how you feel, react, and interact when it comes to money. Join us at 6 p.m. on the fourth Sunday of every month to explore the money dynamic, part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
The Massachusetts Soldiers Legacy Fund, MSLF, was founded in 2004 with a simple goal: to provide educational assistance grants to the children of Massachusetts service members who were killed while deployed on operations enduring an Iraqi freedom. With its current resources, the MSLF guarantees a minimum of $40,000, $10,000 per annum, in educational funding to each child of a fallen service member whose home of record at the Department of Defense was Massachusetts. There's no selection process. If an individual is a child of a service member whose service is credited to Massachusetts and whom gave his or her life in Operation Enduring or Iraqi Freedom, that child qualifies for MSLF funds. We're proud to report that we're accomplishing our founding objective thanks to the support of individuals and organizations throughout the United States. To donate, go to mslfund.org.
Are you seeking solutions to creating the life of your dreams? You can have it all. Join Brenda Pierce and guests as we break the blocks holding you back from living your fullest life of wealth, wellness, abundance, and joy. Sign up for newsletters and interesting articles, including the life-changing Telesummit series, Healthy Wealthy Evolution, at healthywealthyevolution.com. Together, we can evolve into our fullest life experience.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Are you a healing practitioner or a serious spiritual seeker? Do you want to be who your soul wants you to be and help others do the same? You can learn angelically guided energy healing with the Lightworkers Healing Method. Because its goal is to align us with our soul's life purpose, LHM is both a healing system and a spiritual growth vehicle. You can return to your natural state of joy and fulfillment and help others do the same. It's a skill, not a gift, and nothing is off limits. Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Come to LightworkersMethod.com as taught at Kripalu and the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Course credits are available.
Greenlock is the place to go for horse therapy you should know. We use the horse, they do the trick, to help you talk and walk and skip. The horse's movement builds your muscle. It also makes you laugh and chuckle. To do our job, your help we need. To run the farm and buy our feed. To help us out, just double-click on greenlock.org. Do it quick.
Change in life can be a peaceful evolution. Join Brenda Pierce and guests on the Healthy Wealthy Evolution Show, where you'll receive solutions to wealth, wellness, and joy. The Healthy Wealthy Evolution Show is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network and heard every fourth Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern on 1510 a.m. NBC Sports Radio Boston and syndicated on the Dream Vision 7 radio network worldwide.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 a.m. NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Lynn McGonigal, host of Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. And we're here today with Hank Wesselman, a shaman and a scientist and the author of many wonderful books, including Spirit Walker, the first of his that I read, and The Bowl of Light, which is a wonderful book on Hawaiian shamanism. Spirit Walker was part of a trilogy that Hank wrote, an autobiographical trilogy that, from my perception, dealt with a future life of his. And so, Hank, would it be okay if we talk about the Hawaiian goddess or Hawaiian spiritual presence, Pele, who figures in all of the books of yours that I've read?
Absolutely.
Can you just give us ignorant Westerners background on Pele?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the shaman, what really defines the shaman is that the shaman learns often in childhood that they have the ability to go into trance very easily. And trance in this case is not an unconscious state. It's more of an expanded state of awareness. And when the shaman goes into the shamanic state of consciousness, they literally re-geography their awareness into a world of things hidden. You know, indigenous people understand that the world is made up of two halves, the world of things which is seen and the world which of things hidden. And they draw no distinction between them. The world of things hidden is where the gods live, where the spirits live, where the ancestors live, where the spirits of the dead live. And, you know, that world talks. So the shaman typically is an individual who learns through training and through initiation to use their own body and mind to create a bridge between the personal world of form and the transpersonal world of the spirits. And when that bridge is formed, it allows the healing gifts of the spirit world to flow across that bridge and into our world. And this is when the miracles happen. And I've been watching miracles happen for, you know, for 30 years in the various workshops and rituals and ceremonies that I've been part of across the years. Now, Pelle is what I think of as a transpersonal force. She was human once. We know that she came from the Southern Ocean, from the Austral Islands, from the land of the red-haired people, and she came here to this island, the spirit, and she lives inside the mountain, which is actually in my front yard. Mauna Loa, the great mountain, goes up to almost 14,000 feet, and I live right on the western flank of it.
Wow.
And that mountain is awake. It's alive. It's been continually erupting and flowing into the Pacific on the other side of the island, fortunately, since 1983. Now, Pelle is a presence in all of my books because I was drawn into connection with her. If you live on her island, it's a good idea to have a relationship with her, don't you think?
Because I would say,
you know,
so.
If you don't honor her on a regular basis, you know, she might get pissed off, you know, and you know what she's going to do then. She's going to throw a flap of lava across your home, and that's going to be that. But I was drawn into connection with this spirit, and it happened first in the book Spirit Walker. I actually encountered her again in my second book, Medicine Maker, and in the third book, Vision Seeker, there's an extraordinary visitation with her at her traditional home in the volcano Kilauea, where the great crater Halemaumau is, where she resides most of the time. Now, interestingly, I don't see Pelle as a woman, although I have had glimpses of her in that way. I see her as a light being.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of like the fire goddess. She's associated with fire and volcanic stone.
Yeah.
And she's unpredictable. You know, she goes where she wants, when she wants.
Right.
And I learned when I was in the Rift Valley in East Africa and Ethiopia, which is filled with volcanics, that she is not sort of restricted to the island of Hawaii. You know, you can pick up on this transpersonal force wherever there are volcanoes.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
And, yeah, so, I mean, you know, I lead this very strange life, Lynn. You know, it's like there's my ordinary Hank Wesselman self who teaches college classes, who teaches workshops, who, you know, creates healing rituals and is able to bring these transpersonal forces through in order to do what needs to be done. And then there's Hank Wesselman who is, he sort of dissolves and he goes into this world of things hidden where I have, you know, adventures. And what can I say? It's an extraordinary path.
Well, that is the world I live in. This is what I teach. I teach people how to do this. So although I did have 20 years in a normal career, so I understand what you mean about two worlds.
Yeah, well, we're in this together.
We're in this together. And so I have this question, and I just want to ask you because I may not get another chance. This is my big chance talking to Hank Wesselman. So Pelle shows up in my living room after Makua leaves, and she's irritated with me, and I haven't yet figured out exactly why, but she's irritated. And then she starts talking about a fire purification ceremony. What is she talking about? Do you know?
Well, in the shamanic world, what you would do is you would connect with her and ask her for information.
Oh, that's what I'm doing.
But, you know, she's like that.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were living at this institute up in Waimea, she'd walk into the house at 2 o'clock in the morning, and all the fire alarms would go off. You know, and my wife and I'd get up, anybody else in the institute would get up, and we'd all wander around, and there's no fire. But the fire alarm is still going off, and so we turn them all off. And I would have to, and she would say to my wife, she's very fond of my wife, Jill, she would say, come and see me. Well, you know, the volcano is 4.5 hours drive from Waimea, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, spirits don't have any concept of time space. You know, they live in all time. So, you know, my wife would have to settle down and go into meditation and say to her, I will come and see you in 2 days. I can't do it right now. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. And we need you to move your energy field out of the house because you're setting off fire alarms. I mean, this is just part and parcel of what it's like, you know, to walk in these two worlds. And life becomes an extraordinary adventure, I might add, in response.
I would agree. There is nothing more interesting in my
opinion. Well, you know, this radio show is coming out of Boston. Is that right?
Yes, it's based in Boston.
Well, you know, anybody who's interested, I'll be at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, the first week in July. Uh-huh. I'll be offering a 5-day workshop called Vision Seeker Level 1. For those who are interested in walking the shaman's path, this would be an opportunity to spend some real quality time together.
That's wonderful. And friends, if you can't make Hank's 5-day, I'm in Boston teaching, starting a fall series, and our series begins in August 24th and 25th, our next series of the core curriculum of the Lightworkers Healing Method, which is a shamanic, it's an angelically guided system with shamanic implications. So,
it's an interesting thing for you to say, you know, because one of the things that we're all aware of is that once you step up into the spiritual hierarchy, which Mako was talking about, you're drawn into connection with the higher organizing intelligences. That's what I think of as angels.
Right.
The higher organizing intelligences. And I don't perceive them as winged superhumans with wings, you know, I don't perceive them as angels. I perceive them as light beings. And one of the things that you have learned, I'm sure, is that they're more inclined to come into relationship with humans who are devoted to service, to being of service, especially to service of groups.
Yes, and the greater good, service.
Family groups, contributing to the greater good. And the ultimate, of course, is for those of us who are in service to the world soul, to the soul of this world.
Yes, and we all have that opportunity. We can all step up.
Well, she responds. She
Absolutely.
Responds. You know, the Gnostics called her the Sophia. The Greeks called her Gaia.
Yeah.
I call her Vajravilasi.
Because?
Vajravilasi. It's a Sanskrit term I got from John Lamb Lash.
Oh, Vajra Sky.
A wonderful book called Not in His Image. I opened up a line of connection with him several years ago, and he gave her this name, Vajravilasi. It means flirtatious thunder.
That's beautiful.
Flirtatious so thunder.
We are down to our last couple of minutes. Do you have just a final thought? I'm so sorry. This is a fabulous conversation, and I'd love to continue it, but unfortunately our time is up.
We can continue it at a future time.
I would just like to
add at the end here that, you know, there are probably 50 to 70 million of us in the United States alone who fall into the category of the transformational community, with more than 100 million in Europe and Britain. These are not small numbers, and the media has not picked up on this yet. We are actually in the process of creating the next cycle of ages, and we're doing it through the beliefs and values and trends that we hold dear. There's a chapter about the transformational community in my book I wrote with Sandra Ingerman called Awakening to the Spirit World. It's called the Transformational Community, and it just sums it up very, very beautifully, very tightly about who we actually are and what we're doing in the world. And this is where I find hope for the future.
Yes, hope for the future. And on that note, friends, hope for the future. We can do it. We can all be who our soul wants us to be. We can all step up. It's true. I really hope you've enjoyed our show today as much as I have with Hank Wesselman. His information is on his wonderful website, sharedwisdom.com. And you can find out more about me and the Lightworkers Healing Method at lightworkersmethod.com. Now, friends, in the months of the solstice, twice a year, we break from our normal format so that we can inspire ourselves another way with musicians and poets and other bringers of joy. So next month, in the month of the solstice, we'll be speaking with Jeff Ferranini, a spiritual poet and the author of Star Songs. We'll be reading and discussing his heart-opening work. So, friends, until we talk again, walk in light, live in light, and be light.
Thanks for tuning in to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be with Lynn McGonigal, the founder and teaching channel of the Lightworkers Healing Method, and her wonderful guests. We're proud to be a part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network and glad to have you with us. Please join us every second Sunday at 6 p.m. and then come to lightworkersmethod.com for many freely shared learning resources. As we each do our part, the world transforms. And hasn't your soul already waited long enough?